It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome in. It is the PJ Show on this Wednesday. You made it through the workday. All downhill from here on this hump day as we move towards another Pirate Baseball weekend after an epic Pirate Baseball night. And that's where we'll start with things today. The numbers are kind of mind-boggling if you look at it. East Carolina and William and Mary back and forth, and the Tribe would always seem to have an answer when the Pirates moved ahead. A big first inning for ECU, but then the Pirates, or rather the Tribe, come back there in Colonial Williamsburg and answer with a three spot in the home half. 27 runs combined in the 14-13 ECU win that went 13 innings and lasted 5.5 hours. 36 hits. There were 6 errors combined. 23 walks, 32 strikeouts, ECU with the program record 22 of those 32 Ks, 47 runners left on base. We mentioned the Pirates setting the single game record for pitching strikeouts, staff strikeouts with a pair of deuces, 22. And William and Mary was just 1 out of 24 for those with runners in scoring position, a key stat as we know. One of the guys who was involved in the broadcast was our own, Philip the Ref Pilkington. He's sitting here right now in studio control. Pilk, have you caught up with your sleep yet? Because I have to imagine that was burning the midnight oil. In fact, it was burning the midnight oil for you pretty well. Are you...
You're only
asleep because you're listening to me drone on and on. That's what's going on.
Nope. It was talk of the town yesterday paired with the longest baseball game I've ever been a part of without a rain delay.
Yeah, 5.5 hours. Look, I think it's interesting. Pirates used about every pitcher except for, I think, Charlie Hodges was the only one they didn't get to, you know, that was available. Let's hear from Cliff Godwin. He said he's never been a part of anything like that.
I ain't never been part of something like that before. You know, our guys fought. It's really hard to get a strike call tonight for both teams, you know, and thank God for Parker Thomas, you know. And a lot of guys have always wanted opportunities coming out of that bullpen, and we used up pretty much everybody we had except Charlie Hodges tonight.
Well, Parker Thomas is interesting, isn't he? Because he has come in now. I mean, here are his two pitches. He pitches great last night. Fantastic. He gets the final outs for a combined no-hitter last week. He came to ECU as a two-way guy. Has, you know, still takes some ground balls in case they need him in the field. But by and large, his pitching has improved as he's concentrating on that, and he's a freshman. So I think that's what a huge kind of two games to debut in. I mean, they're kind of noteworthy games, if you think about it, for him to debut in. CG, on how the Pirate offense played.
Yeah, our offense, I tell you what, man, they kept fighting. They kept fighting. If we got behind, they kept fighting. You know, a lot of credit. You know, Noack comes off the bench and gets a walk, and then, you know, Shaq hits a double when he's running from a 3-2 count. We score, and just a lot of tough at-bats there in those extra innings. Bristol with a big home run, of course.
So, number 9 ECU with the win that will stand out and go down as an all-timer. It was the 100th meeting between William and Mary and East Carolina. But the freshman gets his first collegiate save, got the final two outs, and Eric Ritchie was the winning pitcher. Good to see him get his first victory of the year. I mean, it just kept going and going. It was a crazy evening, undoubtedly. Pilk, anything that stands out to you?
From that game particularly?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. just another proof of Wyatt Lunsford-Schenkman's ability to be one of the top relievers in the country. He was phenomenal. He let up one run. It was unearned. Jake Hunter, his role's changed a lot this year, but what I love about him, he was the only guy that didn't walk anybody last night in the Pirate rotation, and he had some traffic on the bases due to hits, and never once did he try and pitch around a guy. He came right at every hitter, and his maturity might be the best on the team right now, and there's something to be said for that, and that's going to help this team a lot come postseason play, and a lot of opportunities for a lot of guys that normally you don't see, and some of them stepped up.
So William and Mary couldn't get it done when they had runners in scoring position, just one hit in the game. Pirates were 6 of 19. It was the 12th come-from-behind win this season, and ECU 3-0 in extra innings. So huge victory, and I'm sure the team probably got back at 3 in the morning or later. And, shoot, may have been 4. Who knows? And they're now going to have to turn it around. They will have Wichita State in town this weekend. And that'll be Friday at 6, first game from Clark LeClaire Stadium. Pirates, though, win it in 13 in epic fashion. For those wondering, with our stream, our IBX Media app, if you were listening via TuneIn, there's only a certain level where we were taking those we could accommodate X amount of streams. We rose that last night and then had to rise it again, and it was still pretty close to capping that rise because the game was on that hacky Flow Sports. And I mean, that's, boy, the CAA, it's just puzzling why they've gone with Flow. I can't imagine that whatever money they're getting is worth it. Because I mean Flow's like what Division III and II teams use. I mean, that's one of the few D1 conferences. It may be the only D1 conference, but it's certainly one of the very few at most that has that broadcast partnership with Flow.
And the thing about this is too is like, this isn't the scrubbiness conference in D1, right? Whoever comes out of the CAA in baseball is always one of the best four seeds, and the basketball team's like the 13 or a 14 seed.
Well, and they can be they've gotten years where they've, in baseball, they've gotten multiple bids.
Yeah.
Now, their basketball certainly isn't what it once was, or what it was a few years ago when they were a multi-bid league, and should have been. But, I mean, it's not the worst basketball that's ever been played. And, you know, their football speaks for itself at the FCS level. It's a multi-bid, competitive with a lot of teams in it league, even with JMU making the transition.
It's not the MEAC.
Well, and I mean, yeah, or it's not, you know, the Mid-American. I mean, it's nothing like that. So, I mean, the whole Flow thing, I mean, it's been explained to me. They felt like it was good money for the teams compared to, I guess, what ESPN was offering. But that ESPN relationship with the CAA got really badly damaged after Yeager left and they had the new commissioner. And I guess they couldn't come to an agreement on a number. And I'm not so sure ESPN is willing to play ball after that. I mean, it just would make sense to put your product on ESPN Plus if you're a league like the CAA. And if you have to get a game on an odd night for basketball, why not do it? Because you'd be on ESPN, I mean, on linear television. So we'll have some more Pirate news, some portal news from today. A couple of football transfers have entered the portal. One not so surprising, one is really kind of surprising, and ECU's picked up a basketball commit. Lengthy article, Pilk, shifting gears here on Bill Belichick and why it didn't work out with Atlanta and why he wasn't able to get a job this go-around, that sort of thing. Did you see that? Did you read about this? Did you hear about this?
No, I have not had time to look at that. Caught up in all these seasons.
So, David Tepper is referenced in the lengthy article. And apparently, a couple of years ago, the Panthers were considering Belichick, but then Belichick signed that 2-year extension. And so they backed off of him. But somewhere in that article, and I don't have the exact line, but I have the gist of the line. Apparently, David Tepper, and you tell me if this surprises you, sifts through the play calling data of his coaches to determine if they're calling the right plays in his mind.
That is the one part sent to me.
Right. That, I mean, what the hell is that? One, it's not going to, that would never fly with Bill Belichick. Now, I heard Adam Gold talk a little bit about this today. He thinks Belichick inevitably winds up next season after this 24 season in Dallas if he's going to coach again. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And that would make a lot of sense. But then, is Jerry, Jerry Jones isn't going to be able to meddle in this guy in Belichick's affairs. I mean, that's the only reason I don't think that would happen, because certainly Belichick and Tepper would not work together very well at all. At all. I don't think. What say you on that, Bilk?
I don't think Belichick would make it through the second day of the draft without being fired. I think he would tell Tepper he could stick it where the sun don't shine, and Tepper would fire his rear end. Jerry will butt heads, but I think they could make it work. I think Jerry would swallow his pride with Belichick. I think it would be hard for him, but I think he would do it.
Actually work out beautifully for Jerry, because Belichick doesn't like doing media, and Jerry Jones has never met a microphone or camera he's not in love with.
That's true.
But if you think about this, let's go back to the Tepper thing. And I know he's a numbers guy, and I know he's worth more money than I can even conceive. But, I mean, for him to – it just – that is symbolizes how screwed up that franchise is in Charlotte. That's why their drafts have made no sense. That's why it seems like they're throwing stuff to the wall, and whatever sticks is what they go with. And that's why they've had, what is this, the third coach in 3 years upcoming?
Yeah.
Fourth coach in 3 years?
Well, if you count interims.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. It is absurd. And I mean, if you're a Panthers fan right now, there is nothing that is being done with David Tepper as the owner of the franchise that would inspire confidence.
No. My grandma firmly believes that she will die before this team wins the Super Bowl. And she believes that because of David Tepper.
Phil, Super Bowl? You need to get that out of your vocabulary.
That's the point. She thinks she's going to die before the Super Bowl.
But I mean, the thing is this. There is not a chance of that. I mean, you should get that out of your vocabulary. I'm just talking about fielding a legitimate competitive product. I'm not even talking about the playoffs. I'm not even talking about playoffs. I'm talking about a competitive product out there.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why they can't field one. But he's bringing Beyonce to Bank of America Stadium because as we know, concerts never went through Charlotte and that stadium before.
I will say this. If he is the owner for 30 years, they will have a couple playoff seasons sprinkled through. You got to think, as bad as Snyder was, the Redskins had a couple good years. They were never back-to-back. But I would say in the next 30 years, the Panthers could make the playoffs twice under Tepper. That's a realistic number. Two out of the next 30. You go 18 without probably making it. you get there as a wild card. You sneak in with this expanded playoff field at 9-8, and then 12 years later,
wouldn't that be a record if you went that many seasons without making the playoffs?
The Raiders went a while.
Raiders are going a while. Cleveland, obviously. Yeah, Browns went a while.
Browns, yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I need to go look at that.
Yesterday, Pilk made the statement that Caitlin Clark will not save the WNBA. She's putting up big numbers, Pilk, in jersey sales. Fanatics sold out of most sizes in Clark's Indiana Fever jersey within an hour of her being selected by the team as the first overall draft in the Monday night WNBA draft. The retailer is currently offering pre-orders of Clark's jersey that it says it'll ship no later than October 31st. Oh, wow. TMZ reports Clark's jersey became the top seller for a draft pick across all sports in Fanatics history. She will debut with the Fever next month. I submit to you that Caitlin Clark will save the WNBA. I'm now convinced of it.
All right.
And I'm basing it on Fanatics sales. That's what I'm basing it on.
See, because here's my definition. Could it up to, you know, jersey sales this year? Yes. And up in viewership this year? Yes. But, like, the NBA was struggling in the 70s. And yeah, Larry and Magic
yeah.
saved the NBA.
Sure.
Once the Caitlin Clark hype train goes down, after like 2 or 3 years, nobody's going to care anymore. That first year, everybody will be into watching it. Then it'll taper off year two, taper off more year three. Nobody will remember her as a WM player. They'll just remember her as an Iowa player because no one remember. I can't tell you who Breonna Stewart played for in the WNBA or Skylar Diggins or anybody. I remember them in college. I remember watching a lot of their college games. I think it's more so than them, but it tapers off after a while. She doesn't save it.
I don't know. I think this is a different. I think this is a different cat. This Caitlin Clark.
All right. Well, loser. Man. Loser owes the winner a cigar and a beer.
Well, I mean, what is the what? How, what's the timeline?
Oh, decade.
Okay.
Is it still? Are the numbers? Well, I mean, there'll be more people in the country, but you know,
we'll figure this
yeah,
out.
We'll figure we'll this out. But loser owes the winner a cigar and a beer.
Okay.
That's a fair bet.
Yeah, that's good. We'll figure something out. And we'll do it for this year, too. So, want to give a congratulations. Lewis Kinlaw, big Pirate fan, big runner, ran in the Boston Marathon, had an over 7-minute pace, finished in a little over 3 hours, and is qualified for next year's Boston Marathon. So, congratulations to Lewis Kinlaw. That's a big deal. We're going to talk, speaking of bets, we're going to talk some golf bets with Brian Mull today and recap the Masters. That's coming up. We'll do a Pirate Report, and Pilk will have some information for you, too. Bottom of the hour with the Pirate Report, all straight ahead.
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
Okay, so we have Shane Calhoun, as many of you know, entering the transfer portal. A little bit of a surprise. You know, obviously played a lot the last 4 years, and they brought in a new offensive coordinator. There's a new tight ends coach. As I understand it, I guess Calhoun did not like the role that they envisioned for him in the offense. So that's what prompted him. I mean, he had a meeting with the coaches yesterday and then had entry into the portal the same day. He was the captain for the gold team in the purple gold scrimmage. And he was rehabbing an injury, so he couldn't play. So Pilk, I mean, it's kind of shocking. Well, yeah, that's pretty shocking, I think, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, because he's a name that was talked about as somebody who was going to help create depth in the tight end room. So we'll see where he lands. I mean, I think he's got a chance just because he's veteran. He's been productive. Didn't have the greatest year last year, but is somebody that can contribute, and if he's healthy, then even better. So good luck to Shane Calhoun. Omega Blake back in the transfer portal. No surprise there. That was sort of being murmured about. So wide receiver, who has a lot of talent, Omega Blake. Longer with the program hitting the portal. And then East Carolina picked up a guard out of the portal for basketball. Julian Sumoro?
Sure. I haven't got any confirmation yet on the name.
Bronx, New York played from for Gardner Webb. Averaged about 13 points last year. Made a big jump. Tim Kraft, the former ECU assistant, has been the head coach at Gardner Webb, who he played for. Shot 36%, just or a little over 35%, 35.6% from three-point range. So, I mean, if he can duplicate that, he'll be helpful. Shot 40, that's in his career. Shot 40% this past season from the field, 36% from three-point range. It's 5'11", combo guard. You know, Gardner-Webb won 17 games, lost 16 last year. He led the team in steals a year ago. So, you know, the height, I guess, is a little bit of a concern, Pilk, wouldn't you say? Because, you know, at 5'11", that could be tough. I think once the Pirates got into conference play and those long guards and a lot of long wings that a lot of American teams have, Bobby Pettiford struggled at times. Cam Hayes, who's a combo guard, about a little taller than that, listed taller than that, had some struggles at times. So,
yeah. Hey, big guards rule the country. I mean, look at that guy at UConn, yeah. Christian or Tristan or something like that. Newton was his name, I think. He's
Triscuit,
kind of a big guy.
Triscuit,
yeah.
Triscuit Fig Newton. No. Look, Tristan, you're right, and that's why Tristan Newton, even though he's older, has a chance to in the NBA at this point. All right. Pilk, anything from these cuts that would be – we're sitting on these football cuts, and we got a couple of minutes here. Are there one or two that might be burning some interest?
I think it was interesting to hear Jake Garcia talk about the helmet communication thing now that they're talking about going to that.
Okay. Let's play that really quick.
Sometimes I kind of like – I might forget, like, oh, man, I had this in my head, right, in my helmet. And you hear somebody talking, it kind of freaks you out for a second. But, no, I'm getting used to it, and it's really cool. It's really cool. So it's exciting. And, you know, when it gets a little bit windy, it kind of catches in the ear hole, right? So I put my hands over my ear just because I used to see that in the NFL. So I'm like, oh, it's fun.
Boy, you got to like his moxie, don't you? He's charming. You got to like his – he's talented. I think he's got a great shot to be the starting quarterback. I mean, Hauser does too, but I think this guy's got a really great shot to be a guy that's going to start.
I could see it going either way.
That's the smartest thing that college football has done is allowing the helmet communication. Again, it's a small thing, but it, in certain cases, could speed the game up a little bit. You got to speed the game. Attendance at a lot of places is down. Because it's a daytime affair for a family. And, at, you know, economically it's pushing a family. But, I mean, to take up hours just to go to a game, park, especially if you're not a regular attendee, you know, walk, drag the kids, and then you're there for 4 hours at least for the game part. So anything to speed it up.
I agree. It's long overdue. You know, Paul Brown was putting communication things in his guys' helmets in the 50s. What the heck? What took so long? 70 years later.
Well, you know, it's just funny. You see it in all these different sports. They make these rules, and if another sport makes it, well, we don't want to be like the other sport. If college baseball does something, college softball coaches are resistant to do something similar. That's why there wasn't a pitch clock. The reuse of replay all kind of came after, you know, and if a lot of college football go, we don't want to do that like the pros. I mean, it's kind of across the board. I mean, it's really the old school coaches that aren't buying into any of this change or want to buy into any of this change. All right. Let's Pilk, are you ready? Let's go to you for an update. And then Brian Mole will talk some, odds and maybe some locks for the RBC Heritage coming up in Hilton Head, which starts tomorrow, and recap the Masters, which Scottie Scheffler won in dominant fashion. Here is Pilk with a 94.3 The Game Sports Update and Pirate Report. Take it away, Pilkington.
Thanks, P-Man. We will start in Pirate Athletics. Last night, the baseball team got a win 14-13 over William & Mary to improve to 28-8. They will play Wichita State at home this weekend. All three games can be heard right here on 94.3 The Game. Speaking of the Diamond, you can only watch this one on Flow Sports. So if you still have your subscription from last night, the softball team is down at UNCW right now. It's in the top of the second inning, and the game is currently tied at one apiece. ECU tight end Shane Calhoun has entered the transfer portal. He will graduate in May and has 1 year of eligibility left due to COVID after spending 4 years with the Pirates. The basketball team got their first transfer portal addition today. Is guard Julian Solomaro from Gardner-Webb has committed to the program. The 5'11 combo guard had 12 points per game, shooting 36% from downtown in his junior season with the Running Bulldogs. Last night, the Lakers punched their ticket to the NBA playoffs by defeating the Pelicans in a play-in game. The Kings defeated Golden State. The Warriors will go home, and the Kings and Pelicans will play on Friday night to see who the 8th seed is. Eastern Conference gets going tonight as the Heat and Sixers will face off in the City of Brotherly Love to see who the 7 is. And the Hawks and Bulls will play in the house that Jordan built and hopes to stay alive and get a shot at the loser of that first game. Last night, the Canes ended their regular season with a 6-3 loss up in Columbus, but will be the 2 seed in the Metropolitan bracket of the playoffs and take on the New York Islanders. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we're going to talk golf with Brian Maul.
Back to the P-Man.
And that's powerful, sir.
This is the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
All right, welcome back. A little bit of golf talk here with our pal Brian Mull, who just is happening to... He's running into all kinds of things. Out of state, visitors, tee times. Tough to be Mull, people. Tough to be Mull. Brian last night was on a great podcast. I'll let him tell a little bit more about it. I guess it's going to post on YouTube today, but it was live on Twitter last night. Golf writer Brian Mull at BG Mull on text. Good time of the year to follow him there out of the Masters and with the RBC taking place this weekend down in Hilton Head. Brian, how are you? Hope all is well. And I might add, I don't think I mentioned this enough, former two-time in multiple stretches PGA caddy. So Mull's been there on the front lines. And a pretty good golfer himself with a single handicap. So.
Yeah, good to I got to dust off the handicap. It's accumulated a little rust here over the winter, and so we've got to polish it up here a little bit now that the weather's right.
Hey, let me ask you a little bit about the Masters. Let's put a bow on that and before we get into some things, including Brian's going to start giving us some lock picks, his locks for golf going into each event when we talk to him. Entertainment. Well, not even entertainment purposes only. It's now legal in the state. So, Brian, Scottie Scheffler, it was very Tiger-esque. You know, he was the overwhelming favorite versus the field, Scheffler or the field. And it was very, so that's Tiger-like. And then it was very Tiger-like the way he won the tournament in many ways last weekend in Augusta.
No question. You know, overwhelming favorite, like we had not seen in some time. And then, you know, he just kind of hung around. Got off to a great start Thursday, and then just difficult conditions, obviously, with the wind and the firmness of the golf course through Friday and Saturday, and just kind of hung around. And certainly, while there were some other strong names on the leaderboard, you felt like if they could not pull away and create some separation between themselves and Scotty, that ultimately, he was going to have that run of the type of golf we've expected from him, and he sure did, starting at the 8th hole on Sunday, reeling off 6 birdies in the next 9 and slamming the door, and simultaneously his contenders taking some undue risk, making some mental strategic mistakes, and just making it kind of a cakewalk coming down the stretch.
Brian Mull joining us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. You know, Nelly Korda, what she's doing is actually, you know, and all things being relative, she's going for a fifth straight win, I guess, next week in the first women's major. So that's, I mean, what she's doing is pretty remarkable, and it is in some ways greater than what Scheffler's done. You know, again, all things being relative. Now, here's the thing about Scottie Scheffler that you and I were talking about at some point over the weekend. Like, if he finishes in the top three in some of these last events, I mean, you got to go back a year and a half almost 2 years, where he had a finish that was not just, you know, spectacular. And a top three finish for some guys would be, you know, big news. For Scheffler, it's like, well, what happened? Why didn't he win it or finish runner-up?
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, his consistency, the most difficult thing in golf is to be consistent day to day and week to week. And with his look, he's by far the best ball striker. You know, he's plenty long enough off the tee. He's one of the best long iron and mid iron player. We all know that. That's well documented. But I think his short game may be the best also. It just seems to me that there's never a shot around the greens, especially at Augusta National, but really anywhere, there's never a shot around the greens that he can't handle. And the momentum of being able to execute those up and downs at key moments is really what keeps you going in a tournament, especially a tournament like last week, a championship where pars were good scores on a lot of holes. And I think Scotty has bogeyed, he's made bogey or worse on 8% of the holes he's played this year, which is just ridiculous. I mean, Rory played within the first 2 days. He said, look, he just never gives anything back. And because of that, his floor is very high. He almost, and now that he's putting a little bit better, you know, there's a reason he's an overwhelming favorite again this week in Hilton Head.
Yeah, and going to play in that event, again, pending the situation with his wife being very pregnant. Brian Mull with us here, golf writer at BG Mull on Twitter. All right, Ludvig Åberg did not play like a rookie. Now, he finished four shots behind Scheffler, but for the day, Sunday was just a shot behind him. Boy, he's going to be something, isn't he?
He really is. You know, we've talked about it a little bit, but if you could build a prototypical golfer in the year 2024, he would look very much like Ludvig. Not only his physical skills, which are immense, his ability, he's the best driver of the golf ball on the planet, and has a very a pace of play that we could all strive to match, the way he just steps up with very little thought and hits the golf ball. But his attitude and just his poise, his maturity. He plays well beyond his years, seems to have the right approach. And the moment, I'm sure he was nervous, but he didn't look nervous. He looked like he was enjoying himself. And the mistakes he made, I feel like he'll learn from them very quickly. And, he's won one tournament on the PGA Tour, but you have to remember, he was in college getting ready for the NCAA Nationals this time last year. So just amazing what he's accomplished already, having represented the Europeans on the Ryder Cup. He's won three events, two in Europe and one in the United States, and now a runner-up in his very first major championship.
All right, Brian, RBC Heritage in Hilton Head this weekend. John Rahm, after winning the Masters last year, appeared in it. It's now one of the elevated signature events, whatever the hell they're calling it. And so Scottie Scheffler's committed, as you noted there, a lot of the field from last week. I mean, this is a pretty stacked field. It's a limited field event also. So give us kind of the lay of the land on that course there. It doesn't really play to Scheffler's strengths, but I mean, he's so remarkable. How could you go against him at this point? Although I think it will be tough for him to go back to back. Fitzpatrick won it last year, Matthew Fitzpatrick. So it's tough to win that twice in a row. But I mean, it's a hell of a field this weekend in Hilton Head.
Yeah, great field, and ironically, even a slightly larger first than they played for last week in Augusta.
Right,
which is pretty wild. You know, kind of a state of where things are in professional golf right now. Yeah, old school golf course, one of the very first courses that the famous architect Pete Dye designed, along with a little bit of help from Jack Nicklaus, who was just kind of cutting his teeth on that side of his golf course architecture as well. A lot of dog legs, holes winding through the trees, the Spanish moss there, and you know, more of a placement course. You're not going to overpower it. The greens are some of the smallest that we'll see all year on the PGA Tour, so you have to be accurate with your irons, and you're going to miss some greens, so a good short game is also important. When you look at guys who've won here or done well here through the years, I mean, if you go back to the 70s and the 80s, I mean, you're talking the best of the best. Nicklaus, Watson, Miller, Weisskopf, Hale Irwin, Nick Price. I mean, they're just the best golfers that have ever played the game. And you know, lately it's been more of the what you would call the control players, the guys that are just solid through the bag, can gain shots with their putter, but also are going to hit a lot of fairways and have a solid week with the irons as well. So I think it's one of the better golf courses on the PGA Tour, and it's one of the cooler tournaments. Just the vibe down there this time of the year is incredible.
We're talking with Brian Mull. I should have asked you about this before we went to RBC. I'm all over the board here. But there was a rumor, a report, that Rory McIlroy had been offered $850 million to join LIV. And apparently I think the reality is not so much that he turned it down, because I'm not even sure an offer formally was made. But, I mean, what can you tell us about that? Then we'll go back to the RBC with your picks. But go ahead and tell us about that.
Yeah, Rory asked about that this week down in Hilton Head, denied it vehemently. Now, I'll put it this way. If Rory was interested in going to LIV, which by all accounts he is not, he says he plans to play the PGA Tour for the rest of his career, he might be able to get $850 million. I mean, the money's there. It's available.
They're not worried about making a profit. Yeah, they're not worried about making a profit. So, I mean, that, and you told me something a few years ago that was remarkable. I mean, if you compare a billion to a million,
yeah,
it's like 32 days compared to X amount of seconds. Yeah, I mean, or 31 years or something. I mean, it's unreal. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're just dealing. I mean, they're dealing with a monopoly, you know, just play money. And really, what they're trying to do is get a foothold in the game. Certainly, attracting another star like Rory would be a huge step in that direction. But I think it was just rumor. You never know where these things start. They would love to have Rory. I think the tours are eventually going to unite in some capacity. What that's going to look like, nobody knows, and that's probably years away from actually coming to fruition. But they're going to be aggressive. They're going to continue to pursue players and offer obscene amounts of guaranteed money, and they're probably going to attract a couple more along the way. That's just the reality of the times we're living in professional golf.
Yeah. All right, back to the RBC Heritage. Scheffler is the overwhelming favorite. So before, let's just do three locks from you on this. If you're interested in betting on the RBC Heritage, Brian Mull, who is in this space to a degree, has his locks for the week. So I'll let you go, run them off, three locks if anybody's interested in betting on golf, which and the podcast you were on last night, the guy was talking about how much fun it is. So tell me a little bit about, what you got for locks this week.
Yeah, it is fun. And the beauty of golf is there's so many different ways to bet on it. You know, the big jackpot win is the outright, but those are very difficult to hit. The sharpest bettors that are in the market might hit seven or eight of those, and they're betting every week, you know, 45 weeks a year. So you have to be realistic if you do decide to go that way. I'm going to the top 20 market this week. I feel like with a 68-man field, there's some value on some guys that are a little bit deeper on the board. We're going to start with Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry should have won this golf tournament 2 years ago, but he had the misfortune of chipping a ball into the water on the 14th hole on Sunday when he was in the lead and making a double bogey and ended up finishing third. But Shane Lowry has been consistently striking his golf ball throughout the season. He's had two top five finishes in Florida a month ago. And I think he's a real threat to win the golf tournament if you are so inclined. But I really like him in the top 20 market. Another name I like is Matthew Pavon, the Frenchman who won the elevated event at Torrey Pines earlier this season. Backed that up with the third at Pebble Beach, another golf course that has very small greens and is a placement-type golf course. And is in good form. I mean, he finished 12th last week in his first trip to Augusta National on a golf course that you wouldn't think would necessarily be a great fit for his skill set. So I like Matthew Pavon. The books have not shown him enough respect. And then my final top 20 selection is Christian Bezuidenhout, the South African. He's been a member of the USPGA Tour. I think this is his third or fourth year. I followed him at the Masters in 2020, the pandemic year. He was paired with Justin Thomas. He was just kind of coming onto the scene over in the States at that point. Really liked the way he carries himself. Been watching him ever since. He's a world-class putter, and his iron game is starting to match that. He finished, he was the low pro when Nick Dunlap won in the desert earlier this year out in Palm Springs. So he was runner-up there. And he's just been stringing together top 20 finishes, and I think this is a great course fit for him. So those are my three, Lowry, Pavon, and Bezuidenhout, the top 20. I like Pat Cantlay to win, but the odds have shifted quite a bit from where they were earlier in the week. I really like that at 20-1. I think it's down closer to 14 to 15 in most markets now.
I like the name. I like it. So that to me is why I would say Bezuidenhout. I mean, it's just fun to say. All right. Scheffler obviously is the book's favorite, the gambling favorite to win. But I mean, let's face it, coming off the Masters, he was back with his wife pretty much all week. It will be tough. Give me another name or two to watch out as outright winners before we turn you loose.
One of my favorites, a Wake Forest guy. He was Rookie of the Year 2 years ago on the PGA Tour. Just been knocking on the door. Top three finishes left and right. Coming off of the top 10 last week, Cameron Young was the first round leader here 2 years ago. Ended up finishing third. Struggled on the greens a little bit last year, and that's really been the issue with him. He's a world-class ball striker, but when you look at his putting of late, he seems to have unlocked something. He's been above the field average in his last three or four starts, combined with his excellent iron play, and an off course where he can lay back off the tee, use some long irons, get his ball in play, and then let his irons do the work. So Cameron Young, I think there's some value. He's around 28 and 30. And then if you want to go a little bit deeper, JT Poston, another North Carolina guy, native of Hickory, played at Western Carolina, go Catamounts. And JT is a guy who can just black out with the putter, as we saw him do in winning at Sedgefield a few years ago. He has good course history with a couple of top tens here, and he's a guy that could just fill it up. And when you're looking at long shots, you want to look at somebody who can make the putts coming down the stretch. And I think, you know, JT coming off a 30th at the Masters, which is a solid finish for him there, is someone I would have an eye on in the outright market.
Hey, great to talk to you, Brian. We really appreciate it. And hit them straight today when you're out there playing, and we'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure. Enjoy the tournament, and good luck.
There he goes, Brian Mull with us. Stay tuned. More of the Patrick Johnson Show here on 94.3 The Game, 94.3thegame.com, and the IBX Media app still to come.
The stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Thanks to Brian Mull for being on with us here. Final few minutes of the Wednesday edition of the show. Tomorrow on the PJ Show. Tom Shanahan, longtime college and just longtime sports writer, has a new book out. Ruffin McNeil wrote the foreword to it. It is about the desegregation of college football. So we'll talk to Tom about that tomorrow. Tom has covered the Pirates for a season or two for the NNO and Charlotte Observer a couple years back. And then Shane Winkler will be on tomorrow. Do we have a softball score, Pilk?
1-1 in the top of the fourth.
Okay. They're down at UNC Wonderful right now. Shane doesn't know it yet, but he's coming on tomorrow. And then Mullis doesn't know it yet, but Mully's coming on Friday. Rose and Conley play baseball tomorrow, by the way. Second meeting of the year between the two. WrestleMania. Remember that from a couple weeks ago, Pilk?
I do. Shout out Cody Rhodes, finally winning the title.
It was at the Son of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, for all you old school NWA fans or Florida Championship Wrestling fans. So they've held it every year where it's been during the Final Four weekend. And it usually was on Sunday, so it, you know, was between the national semifinals and the finals on Monday night. But I guess they've grown so much that it's become a two-night extravaganza. And this year it was in Philadelphia, where apparently it was cold and miserable. So it was announced today by the new ownership group, which owns the UFC and owns some minor league baseball franchises, that they're no longer going to be operating on the Final Four weekend. They're going to pick another weekend in the spring, I guess, to have WrestleMania in the future. And they say they will never be outside on the East Coast ever again.
Hey, not doing it the Final Four weekend is smart. I think you lose viewers Saturday night with the Final Four.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. All right, big thanks to Brian Moult today. Hopefully his advice is sage and gives you some help. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington. Nice job there. It was great to have the Big Hen back today. I'll try not to sleep in nearly 2 hours tomorrow or oversleep nearly 2 hours tomorrow like I did today and not be so rushed. I'll catch up with you tomorrow morning on TOT and then right here on the 5 o'clock hour for the Patrick Johnson Show. We'll look forward to that. Have a great rest of your evening.